Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast podcast for the week of June 20th, 2022. I'm your host, Zach, and this time we have Chris.
Hello.
And we have a bunch of stuff to dive into this week, so let's jump right in. And we'll kick things off. We got the trailer for next week's July 4th weekend's big event, which is Stranger Things Volume 4. Stranger Things 4 Volume 2. We got the trailer for like those final two episodes. They're both, I think they're both gonna be like over 2 hours long or something. For the final two episodes of this season. But yeah, big epic trailer. Obviously. It's all set to run up that hill because that's become like the theme of Stranger Things now. As Kate Bush's classic song is now the Stranger Things theme, basically.
It just overrided the intro theme. Now it's just straight up like the Kate Hill Bush theme. Kate Bush.
Yeah, the number one hit song on the Billboard charts.
But very cool.
Yeah, well, there's actually, I mean, the remix they did of like. I mean, they had kind of a remix in, like, the actual, like, the, what was it, episode 4 or whatever, where they kind of, like, mixed it up with, like, orchestral, but, like, it's even, like, it's even more like, epic orchestral version mixed with, like, Running Up the Hill, so that was definitely a highlight of the trailer, and then looks like just, like, crazy, like, everyone's gearing up for war against Vecna, like, big battle, like, in the Upside Down, and then in the real world, and someone might die. Or multiple people might die, possibly.
Well, this is not the final season, right?
Yeah, there's one more season. So next year, like maybe 2 years. I'm not sure. I don't think now it's like, oh, season 5 is definitely going to be like next year or whatever. But there's a final season 5 coming sometime in the near future.
So there might be time for upsets, but can't prepare for the next season, which is like last season, go nuts.
Yeah, like yeah. Do you think they're gonna kill any main characters like this in like these final two episodes for the season, Chris?
I got a feeling they were such teasing it with at least one character. Do I mean name names?
I mean, yeah. I mean, we don't know. It's not a spoiler. We're just guessing. So.
Oh man, what's his face? The babysitter character again.
Oh, Steve.
Steve, yeah.
God, if they kill Steve, I'd be so upset.
But it's like, but his arc would be complete, you know, like.
But they're also
die heroically.
But they're also like really building up, like he's gonna get back together with Nancy.
But that's the twist. I feel like you think it's gonna be like happy, but it's
yeah.
Not. The show's not about being happy. So it's sort of dealing with, like, because we all thought Harper died, and I was like, yeah, no, I don't think he's dead. And he's like, what? And he's alive. I wasn't shocked about that, but I could see him getting killed eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely, as I was like, Steve is, like, you wouldn't suspect Steve, but it's like, nope, I could. What about you?
I could possibly see, like, if they killed Steve, and then they have, like, now they have Eddie.
Yeah.
Eddie takes over like the Steve slot, maybe. Because it seems like they haven't really like introduced like one and done. Like it'd be weird if like introduced Eddie and had him be this whole focus and like, oh no, he's dead at the end of the season. Like.
Do you think? They'd kill Nancy or something, just like surprise.
I mean, I feel like they wouldn't just because, like, they're gonna, like, obviously resolve, like, the cliffhanger was that she was stuck in, like, Vecna's mind prison or whatever, but they're gonna, like, I'm sure they're probably gonna free her and then some, like, and then
someone else dies.
Someone else might die, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, well, I mean, we'll find out in literally a week. It's going to be July 1st is when these two episodes are dropping, so get ready for a big 4th of July holiday weekend watching for Stranger Things. So we also got some news this week that apparently Lee Whannell, who you know has brought us The Invisible Man, and I mean worked on like Saw and The Insidious and Upgrade. Apparently, he's in early talks to direct a reboot or like a new version of the Green Hornet, called the Green Hornet and Kato is gonna be the name of the new movie at Universal.
Man, like I still think not enough time has passed for the Green Hornet stuff.
Watch what they Seth Rogen doing, yeah.
Only because they did Kato like really poorly in that version. But I don't know, like.
Let's do a cool badass Green Hornet movie.
I've read the comics and he's competent. If written well, he's competently like interesting.
Yeah, let's get the pulp universe going again. Let's get like
the Shadow
the Shadow and the Phantom and the Lone Ranger and Zorro and
who's the magician guy?
Mandrake.
Mandrake, that's it.
Yeah, let's build to like the Defenders of the Universe or the Defenders of the Earth. It was like Flash Gordon, the Phantom, and Mandrake the Magician like teaming up.
But it's I think like the comic rights are owned by Dynamite at the moment because that's the last.
Yeah, I think they actually they brought back like Defenders of the Earth or whatever, and it's actually a comic again.
So like that was like competent, you know? It's like okay, it's well written, and then you get kind of like a surprise like how like decent it is for an old series. And it's I don't know, do you prefer Green Hornet in the prime era where it's like the 60s where it's all swinging and hip, or modern where it still kind of it stands out a little bit?
I think probably like a period movie.
I think a period movie where like it's the best Green Hornet comics I've read has always been like period ones. The other version I read, I think it's still Dynamite. It's the Kevin Smith take on it, and they made Kato's daughter the like main person. Like it, she takes over as like Kato, but it's really just like a Kato story.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just see what happens. Like I just kind of
yeah.
The Green Hornet movie, in retrospect, isn't as terrible as I think it is, but it just wasn't. Like good, it's that movie I want to watch like a lot. It's funny for like certain parts. It's like well, it fun was, like Seth Rogen like skit.
Well, it's also weird that they had like Michelle Gondry direct it, which is and like they but they like the studio it seems like the studio just like totally hampered any of his like creative like jokes. Vision or anything. You're just like because like Michelle Gondry just makes like super like creative artistic movies. This is like. Like a Eternal Sunshine and stuff, and then it's just like, oh yeah, make Green Hornet.
That's the same guy.
Yeah, because that was the weird thing about it. It was like the guy who made Eternal Sunshine and Be Kind Rewind and all these other like very like artistic, like indie movies. It's like, oh yeah, make Green Hornet. Like,
wow, I did not know that. I just assumed it was someone else. And
make Green Hornet and, like don't have any sort of like. Any of your like your creative like just make it like a kind of bare bones like studio movie like that could have been directed by anybody.
I mean, yeah, if you get like a visionary director who's really good at like scenery and then like lighting and he uses kind of like the surreal things. Green Hornet has none of that. Like there is probably one scene that stands out is when they're driving at night and they're firing their guns out of their car.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only time that's like really cool lights and visuals. The rest of it is just gag jokes and like. Christoph Waltz just like screaming and coming out with like a superhero thing, watching that man go insane, which I think is fine. Like, you know what I mean? Like I didn't mind Christoph Waltz
mm-hmm.
performance. He was like fun because you just expect him to be like so aloof for like a criminal because he's like embracing his superhero supervillain side. It's like, all right, he's going through like a midlife crisis. It's fun.
But yeah, with Lee Whannell directing it, like especially like you know watching like Upgrade or something, like definitely like give me that cool action Green Hornet like you know, like with like the like upgrade style, like choreography and stuff. And like, it just get like two, like someone, so, like a cool action person for Green Hornet, and then get like a really like awesome like martial arts guy for
Kato. Taylor Ederson.
Okay. Yep.
Kingsman. Slap a green mask on him.
Yep.
Just boom. He's handsome outside of the character. He's handsome inside the character, like dressed up. And then just have him dance around and fight. Like, that's all I want.
And then who's your Kato?
Henry Gold is too old now.
Yeah.
You need someone who, like, is appropriate to, like, match. I don't know. We just need, like, me? I don't know. I'm too old, too. Like, I'm too old to be Kato now.
Is Louis Tan too old or something? Or, like,
But you need to match the group. It'd be weird that, I mean, you can do, or Kato is older and is teaching the Green Hornet, like, these things. So it kind of makes sense why. You could do it. Yeah, you can. This makes more sense. Or, like, Kato is a little older because, like, he's just like okay, I'll do this. I'll help protect you, and we'll keep a cover together.
Louis Tan is only 2 years older than Taron Egerton, so.
Holy shit.
Taron Egerton was born in 1989, and then Louis Tan was, like, 1987.
So I can be Kato. I'm as old as Louis Tan, though.
Yeah. I was just,
all right, let me fly now.
I was just, like, Iko Uwe, but then, like, I think Iko Uwe is, like, definitely is, like, way older than those guys. Well, he's, like, he's, like, 6 years older than them, so.
He's definitely, like, 40. Or, like, 38. You know, like, Iko Uwe's up there. How old is Iko Uwe? I know you're looking it up.
He's born 83, so.
He's, like, 39.
Yeah. But someone like that, you definitely need to, like, get someone who's like a martial arts superstar for Kato.
Yeah.
Because they had
it's always like, how are you gonna make Kato?
They had Jay Chou in the corner movie, who's like a Taiwanese pop sensation.
I don't think he's like an actor. I mean, I don't think he's he was not a convincing martial artist. I mean, that was, like, his biggest martial artist role.
Yeah. He's like, he was no Rain.
Yeah, why didn't they just get Rain?
Yeah.
Well, maybe Rain's still in good shape. He can be Kato.
Yeah.
How about the guy from,
Korean pop sensation Rain?
Yeah, just a bunch of Korean pop. Just hire a bunch of BTS singers. Just, they're all Kato. Just every scene is a different member.
BTS is Kato.
Yeah, BTS is.
They're all just like in this. It's like we're one person.
they're
in sync with each other, just like fighting.
Just pounding someone, just all like kicking and stomping. I'd watch that. What's that? It's like Wonderful 101. Like
the game.
You remember that game?
Yeah, the Wonderful 101 or whatever.
Yeah, it's like there's just 101 heroes together and they form as one team, like a Voltron, and so like BTS is basically that.
Yeah.
Quick, Kato, go! And just like all of them funnel out of a car to start like fighting.
But so I guess we'll find out. Lee Winnell is in negotiations right now, and then if those go through okay, then they're gonna fast track this one into production, so we could see this in like fairly soon here. And then we also got some news about the Spy Kids reboot that's gonna be coming to Netflix. So Rodriguez is gonna write it, direct it, and produce it again. It's a total reboot of the Spy Kids franchise. And Gina Rodriguez and Zachary Levi are going to star as the new parents who, I'm assuming, maybe get kidnapped or whatever happens to have the kids take over.
I don't want them to get kidnapped. I want them to get killed. I want a Bond, like, Spy Kid reboot.
Like, like
leading Daniel Craig style.
Like Rodriguez is leading all the way back to like because Rodriguez operates in like PG family mode or like R-rated crazy mode. So you want Spy Kids to go like back into like the like grindhouse like Desperado era side of Rodriguez, like the machete side of like just like a super bloody violent Spy Kids.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's gonna be family friendly. It's part of like Rodriguez signed like a deal with Netflix to make like family movies for them. So he made like that. I think it was like the like Sharkboy and Lava Girl like sequel, like We Can Be Heroes. It's in like that universe. And then the new Spy Kids. And apparently it's gonna be. It sounds kind of like the plot of this like reboot sounds similar to like 3, where it's like there's a powerful game developer that unleashes a computer virus that gives him control of all technology. Like wasn't that Sloan? Wasn't he like a video game company guy?
I think he was in prison in VR. I don't know if he was a video game designer.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing about it was like they were in like VR and it was all like crazy. Like that was the big like 3D. Stallone's in 3D coming right at you.
I blend the shit out of Spy Kids movies. It's like, is Steve Buscemi in one of them?
Probably.
And then...
Wasn't there sort of already a reboot? Because wasn't there a fourth one where it was a totally different family? But then,
it was
like
the cousins.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because you could just basically keep continuing off like different Ortegas.
Wasn't it Joel McHale and Jessica Alba were like the parents?
Yeah.
And then, but Joel McHale wasn't a spy, and then he found out that, like, Jessica Alba was a spy.
Oh, he, like, he...
I think he was just, like, a normal, like, guy. He's like, wait, my wife's a spy? What?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't see it. I think I saw, like, the highlight part at the end where, like, basically all the returning cast that they can just call showed up.
Yeah. It's also so bizarre that, like Danny Trejo is in the Spy Kids universe as Machete.
But like which one?
He's their uncle. he's uncle Machete.
They always say he's always the same Machete, but then I'm like, I don't know if they understand what that means.
Yeah.
We're getting his time to like invent all this stuff for like the kids, and then he runs off and then like he doesn't know how to text.
Does he tell like the kid, like the Spy Kids about like his like other like it's like, and then I cut a guy's stomach open and I used this test to bungee jump down a hospital building.
And then I had a threesome with, like, with like Lindsay Lohan and her like stepmom or her mom.
Yeah.
I gotta see Machete. I haven't like watched that. That's a movie I haven't seen in a long time.
You saw Machete Kills too, right?
I seen bits. I always like mean to watch it. I've just never seen it.
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's kind of a mess, but there's some fun stuff about it. There's a villain who's basically a chameleon, but basically before that movie came out, they're like, oh man, all these people are in it. Like Lady Gaga's in it. Walt Goggins is in it. Like all these people are in it. Like half the cast is just like this assassin who can change his appearance.
Wait, Walter Goggins is the same character as Lady Gaga?
Yeah. It's like,
oh. Isn't it also the same character as Cuba Gooding Jr.?
I think it's like every time someone shows up, it's like usually like this like chameleon-esque assassin guy.
Gotcha.
But so Brand New Spy Kids coming sometime to the near future on Netflix, so keep an eye out for that one. And then we also got some crazy Game of Thrones news. So the prequel series is coming in August on HBO and HBO Max. But we found out this week we're getting a spinoff that's going to take place after Game of Thrones, like the main series, that's going to follow Jon Snow. which apparently this was like completely like kind of Kit Harington brought this up, like kind of developed this and like brought to HBO. They're like, oh yeah, we'll do that. And then I think George R. Martin like helped with the script, like the story too. So yeah, it's set after the events of Game of Thrones, the main show, and then yeah, just following Jon Snow and his whatever he's doing afterwards. Not being the king, just like heading off into the sunset.
He just turns around, like basically he's like, I'm going to the north, aha, and just like as soon as like, you know, the Unsullied aren't looking, he just runs back.
Yeah, well,
the thing, like he's banished to the north, but then like I don't think like it's like, are they gonna like hold him to that?
Yeah, he basically committed like regicide or whatever the like queen's version of that is, because like regicide is killing the king, so it's like was
and then queenicide.
Yeah. So yeah, so he got banished to like the north. And he was going to go live with the wildlings. So I guess it would be, like, him and the wildlings, like, doing wacky adventures or whatever, or having adventures in North.
I guess that's it.
But I mean, there's what's the threat in the North
out there?
Yeah, like, Night King's dead. There's no White Walkers anymore.
Night King, like, conquered the North. It's been around killing things to become, like, his army, but they're all gone, so...
Yeah, he's dead, so that killed every single White Walker that ever existed, so they're all gone. So it's like, what's left?
You know, it could just be, like, what if there's, like, another Night Stalker army?
There's another, like, worse villain than the Night King, just, like, the Night King's, like, emperor or something. It's like, oh, the Night King was bad, here's, like, yeah...
Yeah, that's the thing about what they did, and here's the like good thing and bad things when they explain the origins of the Night King and how the White Walkers started, because a bunch of fairies were dicks. Like, I don't know why they even made the Night King.
Yeah,
I kind of forgot that. It's such
for revenge against humanity or something, because they like humanity like like was hunting them or hurting them, or like they went like, oh, humanity's bad, we gotta kill them.
That's why.
I think it was something like that. That's usually what it is.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. But yeah, like unless it's like another fairy group that does it again, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, I don't know, the first batch was bad, let's try it again, and they try to turn another human into the Night King.
Or they got, or like, Some other like force or something like rises up against Bran's rule, and then like they like we gotta get Jon back to help us fight this new army or whatever.
I can see that.
Which I don't know if everyone should come back. Like if they get like most like that bunch of the cast from the like, Game of Thrones come back.
If it's a small stakes thing, you don't need the whole group, but it'd be nice to see them to see where they are. Maybe do a time jump.
Yeah. And I think there's still House of the Dragon's coming up in August. So and then we got this new Jon Snow show. And apparently there's also four more Game of Thrones shows that are in development, plus an animated show. So potentially tons of Game of Thrones coming still to HBO. Even though like a lot of people like kind of hate it now. I mean, hopefully the House of Dragon is awesome and kind of like washes the taste of the final season of Game of Thrones out of everyone's mouth.
That'd be nice.
Because there's definitely some cool stuff about the final season of Game of Thrones, but they're like it was just so rushed and messy. It's like, wait, what? It was like two years worth of story like crammed into like eight episodes.
I mean, yeah, how long is this series?
This new show?
Mm-hmm.
They've said how many episodes. It's so early. I'm guessing it'll probably be like 10 episodes for first season.
I only say that because it's like, imagine if they're like, oh shit, like we should make this as building momentum, and then they're figure out like how to craft this besides trying to get the goodwill back.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely have to see like how House of the Dragon works. So then I'm sure it's gonna like affect like if like House of the Dragon comes out and like everyone's like, oh yeah, this is fucking awesome. Then I'm sure HBO was like, get these Game of Thrones shows going. Like,
it'd be hilarious. I mean, it'd be bad, but hilarious. And basically, they think they're doing good, and then House of Dragons does terrible, and they're like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, if House of Dragons comes out and it's like a mess like the final season of Game of Thrones was, like, I'm sure that might put the like really put like the kibosh on a bunch of like these like spin-off shows. They might be like, all right, let's hold off on some of these or work on some of them.
Maybe they should like workshop these things besides.
But yeah, I mean, we'll see in slightly over 2 months. We'll find out how House of Dragon is. And so, last bit of news this week is that we got news about another Disney live action reboot or remake. So Guy Ritchie is going to be directing a live action reboot based on Hercules, which I think just celebrated its 25th anniversary. This past week, 20th or 25th anniversary, one of those. So a live action, like based, obviously not like it's not like it's kind of gonna be like the Rock Hercules or something. It's gonna be based on the Disney version, so like probably a musical. Although I mean, yeah, I guess like yeah, Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin were like still musicals, but then Mulan was not. But live action version of the Disney movie. I don't think no casting or anything yet. I wonder if, like who'd you cast to be like the Disney Hercules? In live action.
Easy. Totally. They could get Chris Hemsworth. Slap him in.
Yep.
Liam Hemsworth.
As a good one of the Hemsworths. One of the Hemsworths. Yeah.
Is Chris Pine still up producing? He can get three times as big.
Yeah. Disney Hercules, he wasn't that ripped. Like, you know, he doesn't be like the fucking like mountain from Game of Thrones or something. But
you need an actor who at least looks sort of thick. Like, if The Rock was 20 years younger, I would say The Rock.
He's already been Hercules.
And it's fine. I didn't mind his Hercules interpretation.
Yeah. The only thing weird about his is they like rush through the actual Hercules story and they're like, and here's our new weird story that we're gonna tell about like him like becoming basically because they did all the labors in like a montage at the beginning of like here's all his like iconic labors, like he fought the Hydra and stuff. It's like one scene. And then the rest of the movie is like a weird kind of like Seven Samurai. We have to like save this village story. That was the only weird. That was like the only weird thing about that movie, or one of the weird things about that movie. But Joe and Anthony Russo are also going to be producing this movie. So lots of people, big names behind the scenes. And I'm just looking at the news story, but I didn't mention like when is that Jason Statham movie coming out?
Which one?
Operation Fortune.
Like, was this the new
Guy Ritchie one where it's like he's like crazy spy movie with like Aubrey Plaza. I thought it was supposed to have already been out, but then it just kind of has like no release date, right? It's just like
sometime
this year is coming out.
Yeah, man, like you just reminded me like that was a thing.
Yeah, it got like delayed twice, and then they pulled it from like STX, the company that's putting it out, which also went, I think it went bankrupt or something. So it got pulled from their schedule in like February. So it just says it has no release date. But I think that was, I mean, that was Guy Ritchie's next movie. I think he's also working on, he made like a action thriller with Jake Gyllenhaal that I think he sold to Amazon, but that it doesn't have a title. But that's coming up sometime soon, and then yeah, and then he'll start working on Hercules, I guess, pretty soon here. Do you think they should just have Danny DeVito just reprise his role as Phil?
I think he'd be down. I think that would be like sort of the
just put some horns on him, give him some hoofs.
Total CGI his face, make him horrific CGI monster, but people would be fans. Like Danny DeVito has a big cult following. Mm-hmm. Now with like a younger generation, and then just to like, yeah, like he's in it and he's not like, you know, just like a side character, he's the same character you like come to love. Like, just if you're gonna remake it, don't do the Mulan thing where it's like a hard reboot and it's just like, ugh, what is
serious
going? Like, no one's happy
yeah
to like watch this.
I also wonder who to cast as Hades now, because obviously James Woods is like probably not on the table.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. Just like put it out there.
Jason Statham is Hades.
Holy crap, that would work. I'll be down for that.
Or I know like Hugh Grant like works with Guy Ritchie all the time now too. So.
Hugh Grant's like charming still, and even his like most villainous roles, he's still like kind of like more creepy uncle than like villain.
Nicolas Cage is Hades.
I'll be down.
Like that match, like the like yeah, definitely like match like that, the crazy energy of James Woods from the original. But yeah, I guess that's coming up soon. What other? I feel like just like for a while there, like it was like every Disney movie was getting remade. But then I feel like they've kind of like it's been like kind of slowed down a little bit. Like I feel like it was like because Mulan was the last big one. They're doing like I think they're doing a Lion King prequel movie that's like a prequel to like the live action remake.
What?
Yeah, it's gonna be like young Mufasa or something. But I feel like there's like other ones coming up that like. Oh yeah, there's so Pinocchio, which is coming up in September, like the Robert Zemeckis Pinocchio, that's coming up on, I think it's gonna be a Disney Plus movie. There's a Peter Pan remake. There's a Little Mermaid, Snow White. Robin Hood is coming up. Bambi is coming up. Hunchback.
So the Robin Hood one, they're going to have CGI foxes.
Probably.
Or they're just going to do like...
It'll probably be like the Jungle Book or something. Where it's, but like... I don't... They haven't done like CG... Like they haven't done any of their, like, other animal characters that wear clothes in CG. They've only done like Jungle Book or Lion King or Lady the Tramp and stuff. That's just like like normal animals. Like they haven't done like right. Like anthropomorphic animals in CG yet.
It'd be different. I mean, just because, like, I only can think about it if it's like if it's not CG, like stop motion. If you're like Fantastic Mr. Fox, it's gonna be like Robin Hood.
Yeah. But yeah, there is a ton of live action remakes coming up still. So pretty much every any of the big movies that you can think of are getting a live action remake.
I mean, they're all up for grabs. You never know what's gonna just be out.
And all of them made like Lion King made $1 billion, like Beauty and the Beast made $1 billion. Like they're making tons of money. So they're going to keep making them until they don't make money anymore. Don't, like, bring people to Disney+.
Yeah, they just won't go to theaters. They're just going to Disney Plus.
But anyway, that's it for news this week. So why don't you jump into show and tell? And Chris, did you see anything in the last week or so here?
I have. So I've been watching a bunch of Korean shows lately.
Okay.
Because they're just on, and my fiance and I just sat into it. So we started watching All of Us Are Dead on Netflix. So it's about like an outbreak that breaks out in Korea, like a zombie outbreak that is created by like adrenaline and like rabies sort of, and like
so it's more like 20, so it's more like 28 days later.
But it what?
Is it more like 28 days later?
Sort of. So it's like a scientist like makes it so he gives it to his son to build up his like aggression, so when someone like is bullying him, he can like he feels the urge to like retaliate because he just doesn't have that, like because
he was being bullied a lot.
So like yeah, because he was being bullied, he gets and a little side note from my fiance, he gets bullied a lot, and then he like kind of taps into that, but he dies. And then because of that, like, the father goes and tries to, like, oh, shit, like, my kid died. I didn't expect that. And then he comes back to life. And then it's like, oh, fuck, like, I had to hide my kid. And then he wants to test, like, why and all these kind of things. And then, like, one day, like, also the scientist also works at the school, at this high school. And then, because he basically needs, like, more experiment and test subjects, he kidnaps, like, one of the students. And then the student, like, as she's, like, trying to figure out, like, about this, like, thing, she gets bit and breaks free. And then the typical, like, oh, we're trying to help this person who's, like, gravely ill. And then that person bites another person. And then, you know, they start turning and all this. But, like, it does this typical buildup of everything's trying to be trying to act normal in the school, even though like something horrific is going on in the background. They're like, oh, that's strange. Anyway, let's go back to class. Like, it's a great like slice of life of Korea just like dealing with this because they're being very polite about things until they can't. And I'm like skipping ahead episodes because there's like a whole different like love story and love triangle going on and all these relationships and these like insanely aggressive bullies in the school. But if you were to do like Resident Evil, like this would be it. This way of like, okay, like the zombie outbreak happens in the school and then it sort of spreads because people start taking the victims like from the school, and they take some depending on where they get bit and how you know how near death they are, they either turn instantly or they take a little bit of time. And that little bit of time, like, they keep transporting some of the victims away, and then, like, it keeps spreading until eventually, like, this whole city is overrun, and then it gets, like, locked down. So it's really good at, like, showing you basically a lot of different characters from their view, but you mainly follow this core group of, like, high school kids who are just trying to survive. And that goes on for, like, 5 episodes of a 10-episode series. But I think, like, by episode 4, they just throw a curveball into the show, where you become a super zombie they don't really explain why. It just seems like the more aggressive in either direction, where like you're either or just the more like emotional, like if you're aggressive you can come back to life as like a super zombie where you have the powers of regeneration, and then or like up until where you got injured, like you just like are coming back to life, or you're super sad and kind of depressed and then you come back to life to like get revenge. So they bring back a few of those people that you think are dead and just like, nope, like I'm a super zombie now, I've got these crazy powers. So that kind of like is different about the show, but it makes sense of like the characters where like, okay, like now that they have these powers, like they're gonna like do something like they always wanted to do. While these like government officials trying to like hide it up and trying to like downplay the disaster while trying to contain it. And then you have characters who basically you think they're going to get like big redemption arcs or like they're going to like have their time to shine and are just immediately killed. there's a lot of characters, and I just can't go through all of this time, but the show's good up until, like, the last episode. Like, it definitely, like, does not know how to stick the landing at the end. I think it's come back for season two, but it's funny because, like, it gets to, like, a very coherent conclusion. Like, for almost the whole story, you understand what happens, and then it's, like, that whole, like, okay, like, how to rebuild, and then it's, like, there's no, like, evil, like, government conspiracy. It's just, like, a real reaction to these issues. And then you have these characters who basically are just ordinary people. Like, you get, like, a fire rescue guy, you have, like, a chicken delivery woman, you have, like, students, you have a government of, like, senator who's very, or whatever they call, like, their version in Korea, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have different characters who basically are trying to do their best by basically what their daily lives would be. There's no secret, like, oh, like, I also, on the side, am just, like, a karate master. Like, what? Like, you know? Like, none of that is involved. So, it's good. It's fun, but, again, just right at the end, right at this, like, peak of just trying to explain things, before I finish, I was like, oh, you also have, like, a whiny main character who you think is the main character for the longest time. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's a show that surprises you. And then right at the end, it's, like, it's still inconclusive if this main character is dead or not, even though at this point now there's, like, five main characters. Because it's one of those shows where, like, you think it's, like, just two. And then it's, like, okay, now they're building up, and now you get three, and then four, and then five. And then by the end, you have, like, 10 characters who you're following. And it's like Game of Thrones, where basically you start with, like, one, and then it gets to that point. So, you know, like, it's very episodic, and then you follow different every 10 minutes shift to, like, another person. And some of it crosses over, some of them they don't. But, yeah, like, it's a show that basically is just by the volume of just different slices of storytelling. And it's good. Like, you find a lot of interesting things. But, like, it'd be this weird, intense scene, and then it gets solved in a cutaway, and they're just like, oh, also, like, the next day, and they're totally fine. I'm like, what happened? How did you get here? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those. Like, wait, what are they doing? And then it's just like, time skip, and you're like, wait, what? So, it's interesting. I'm not saying go, it's not, like, culturally crazy, like, Squid Games. Like, Squid Game, that, like, revolutionized Korean shit. But this is, like, all right, it was popular because, like, I guess right after Squid Games, because I know this came out a little bit after Squid Game, so I'm behind on talking about it, but finally saw it. And then I followed it up with one more. I watched Hellbound, and also another Korean horror show that I think is made by the same guys who made Squid Games.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone like that. It's someone, like, popular. So, Hellbound is, like, it's a show about demons or angels, depending on the definition of the time, that come down to Earth and are start, like, eliminating people they think are full of sin. And so, it's random. No one really knows why. They kind of think that, like, they choose targets based on sin. And the first arc of this series focuses on this woman who gets cursed by, well, it's like a ghostly head shows up and just tells them, like, hey, 3 days, like, you're going to die, and then disappears. And then after 3 days, these, like, hulking smoke monsters show up and beat the fuck out of you. And then, like, zap you until you basically burn to a crisp with, like, light, and then they go away. And then you're just left with, like, a charred skeletal remain. They don't explain anything about that. That just happens, right? And then this one guy started a religion based on those incidences called, like, the New Truth. And he's promoting, like, hey, like, you ought to be good people. You know, humans are full of sin, and, like, this is happening because of, like, God is angry and stuff. And it starts, like, this the pro group who's all about, like, yeah, like, this religion's the way, blah blah blah, and then the anti group who just kind of, like, would be, like, real people, like, you know, going, yeah, someone fanatical showed up and was like, yeah, the sun is evil, and you're like, what? You know, like, it's one of those, like, this is crazy. But, like, after, like, two incidences, and one's recorded, like, super live on TV, like, then, like, it goes, like, to the, like, crazy factory where they're just mass producing these cultists now. And it's like, it shows you just like how crazy fanatical people can get. But it's like it has a point where it's like, it's not like other religions. It's like, okay, miracles. And it's like, well, okay, I guess that's a miracle. Like, yeah, that kind of looks like Jesus in this bread. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to prove. But when like this happens and it's like, no, like check out this head that shows up and screams, and then like whatever, like this happens, it's like then these horrific smoke monsters show up. Like after the second incident, it's like, no, this is true. The first incident is just something that someone got captured on camera, and the second incident is like planned. It's like, okay, hey, like, hey, I was cursed, like this is gonna happen to me. And then this church group goes, okay, hey, like let's sort of promote this. It's unfortunate this is happening to you, but like let's try to like really use this as like a marketing tool for our religion. And then they do. And then it's like, and then the next arc of the story is basically like later on, where basically this has now happened so many times where people are just used to it. And like, it's like the show Hellbound. It's funny because the trailer and like some of the marketing art looks like it's some sort of zombie apocalypse show. But when you watch it, it's like not. It's like, what? At least the first two arcs are very normal. And see, because it seems like every three episodes, it time skips to like a different time where like things are now getting wackier. But it just caught us off guard when we were watching it, because like the first episode was like, all right, like what's Hellbound about? Like, and then it's so like, it's such a literal translation of things, because it's like, okay, no, these monsters are going, like, we're taking you to hell, you are hellbound. I'm like, who wrote this? Like, this dialogue sounds like, you know what I mean? Like, and then they I guess you could see where they cut the budget, because when I talk about these, like, monsters, they're okay. They're not, like, super realistic. You could tell, like, certain things are green screen. All right, right? The floating head, the thing that is supposed to, like, declare, like, oh, you're gonna die and stuff like that, it looks like it came out of a fucking commercial. Like, it looks like it's going to talk about, like, some sort of ointment. Like, it just doesn't look good. Like, it just, because it's a pair of, like, glowing eyes and sort of, like, this vague cloud face. But it's so, like, jarring when you look at everything else. Because it's, like, bright blue and, like, red and gray lines. Like, it's like, what is this? So, I caught that. Like, that was something I was like, all right, this is weird. But we gave it a shot. It's interesting. Like, it's got, like, the points I'm highlighting about everything, like, are just the best of the first three episodes, and each episode's, like, an hour. So it's, like, you gotta set some time, watch it in chunks, because I think if you marathon it, I think you'd just be burnt out. But I don't know, for us, like two episodes is, like, enough, because, like, one episode sort of ends on a cliffhanger, and then the other episode just picks up, and then it's, like, all right, that's cool. And then it ends on a good note. Otherwise, like, I feel like they haven't figured out the binge formula yet, where you don't need to end an episode on a cliffhanger to kind of keep you watching, like, regardless where I'm gonna watch, you know? Like, there's no, like Moon Knight does that, is the better example, where, like, at the end of every episode, there's some zinger at the end where it's like, oh, they'll stay tuned next week. You know, like, it doesn't have any of that. It tries to. But I think by the third episode, like, we watched the third episode, I'm like, I don't need to watch an episode, like, right now. I could wait. All of Us Are Dead are like that, too. Every episode actually ends on a pretty good note. That's why it's really surprising at the end of the last episode for All of Us Are Dead. It just goes like, oh, here's this something crazy thing that happens. And I'm like, I don't even care what happens. Like, it's the last episode. Well, I'm not going to, like, be on the edge of my seat waiting. So. Yeah, Korean shows. But yeah, that's about from me. What about you, Zach? What have you been watching?
Well, staying TV shows for first two here. So I've seen the first two episodes of Dark Winds, which is the new AMC show. It's like a kind of mystery crime thriller. It's actually based on a series of books, like these, like, mystery books, and it's set on a like Navajo Indian reservation in the 70s, and it's if I was like two Navajo detectives or police officers, Zahn McLaren, who you've probably seen in like, he was in Westworld, he was in Fargo season two. He was like Echo's dad in Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
He is the main character. Like he's Joe Leaporn, and then Kiel Gordon plays Jim Chi, who's like the new kind of rookie cop that shows up. And then there is basically they're investigating a murder, but then there's also a bank robbery that happened, and those two things are connected, or it seems like they're like might be connected, because like one of the people that like witnessed like this, because the bank robbery is crazy, because like they fly in on a helicopter and like rob the bank and they fly off, and then one of the guys that sees the helicopter as it flies like over the reservation, like a week later he's like dead in a hotel, so then that's when like Leaphorn and Chi show up and like are investigating like this like murder. So it's like, how is that guy connected to like the bank robbery, and like the bank robbers are just, like still out there. So yeah, it's a, you know, it's like a detective noir crime show. It's good so far. It's not like the best AMC show I've seen. Like it's probably I would put it like kind of mid tier AMC, but like still some really good, like pretty good so far. If you're like, it definitely has like that kind of True Detective a little bit kind of stuff going on. There's like a little hint of like, I don't know if it's like actually like supernatural, or like they're kind of like hinting that there's like supernatural stuff maybe, like where there might be like, there's like, it seems like one of the other like police officers is like, she's being like tormented by a witch possibly, and then like there's like a ritual at the hotel that like that's what everyone was at this ritual got murdered. So it could turn to like a crazy like supernatural thing at by the end of it, like who knows, but I mean True Detective had that too, where they're kind of like, I remember like the first season everyone was like, is it Lovecraft, or is Cthulhu gonna show up in this show, like is the, so yellow,
like, it starts like kind of realistic and then it gets just Lovecraftian.
It's realistic, and then there's like these little like hints of like there maybe there's like supernatural stuff, or maybe it's just like maybe it's just like in people's heads, like, or maybe it's just like their like belief in like, you know, like the Native American like superstition and like legends and stuff, or like playing on them.
That's different.
But yeah, if you're into like crime, you know, crime thriller stuff, it's worth checking out. It's six episodes, and it's two in right now. So, and then I also saw the series finale of Obi-Wan, which you haven't seen that yet, Chris.
I'm on the last episode.
So that was the last episode was this week. So I won't spoil it because you haven't seen it yet. But like, pretty, like, still like it's definitely like. It was definitely better. Not seeing the whole thing, it's definitely better than Book of Boba Fett. Like, I put it like definitely above Book of Boba Fett, but like still not as good as like Mandalorian. But the final episode has like some pretty awesome stuff in it. Like, there's like you know, like a kind of like resolution to like the Obi-Wan Darth Vader stuff that's like pretty awesome. Some fun cameos from people that people were like waiting for. Or like hoping to see, kind of ends things on like a much more like upbeat, hopeful note than like I think people were expecting, because like especially like the trailers and like kind of like the like first couple episodes is like, oh man, Obi-Wan's in a bad place, but then kind of like this episode kind of wraps it up. He's like, oh, he's doing good now, okay.
It's not like he had a drinking habit or something. He just sort of goes, yeah, I'm the Force again.
Yeah, but yeah, I think overall, a solid, fun Star Wars show. And yeah, definitely much more like focused and not as messy as Book of Boba Fett, but yeah, not nearly as good as like Mandalorian. And then if they do, like, there's talk about season two, which I don't know what the hell that they would do for season two. Like what else is there? What else do they want to do before A New Hope? Like,
I mean, he's really gonna like really expand that timeline between New Hope and Rogue One.
This is after Rogue One. This is before Rogue One. Yeah. This is
before, like way before.
Yeah. But yeah, like what I don't even know if they do a season two, like what the hell would he what are you doing? Like
during the events of Rogue One, Obi-Wan is just sitting on Tatooine and just staring at Luke, like, do something cool.
Oh, guess what, guys? He fought Darth Vader like three more times before A New Hope. But maybe if you watch it, we'll dive more into it in like an episode or a week or so here, Chris. But it was solid. I think it's definitely worth like, especially the first episode definitely is like has some of the best moments of the whole series. So.
I mean, I didn't mind the, like, last week's episode where they're kind of defending, like, the base until they can
get... Yeah, that was
fun.
That was cool, yeah, and, like, Darth Vader, like, ripping the ship out of the sky, like, Force Unleashed style.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, his, like, barely even putting up a sweat against Reva, like, just, like, not even using his lightsaber, just, like, force, like, just, like, using, like, the force block to, like, block her lightsaber.
Yeah, just like toying with her. It's cool to see Vader fight, but it's weird because he fights kind of like a Shaolin monk, where basically he doesn't bend his shoulders. Like, it's all like it's all just like turning his whole torso, and
they should design that suit better to give him like a little bit more like mobility. Like he's like a Michael Keaton Batman style where he can't move his neck.
Yeah. He has to turn his whole like upper body. Like if he has to move. Like, or you know what I mean? Like, he has a pivot, and he does his, like, footwork that was kind of interesting to see Vader, like, kick.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that was interesting. But you're right, yeah, it definitely is the Michael Keaton Batman, like, whole body turn, and then, like, if he wants to look around, he has to, like, basically move around. So, pretty cocky and pretty cool. Definitely, I'm looking forward to this episode. Like, I wasn't hating an Obi-Wan. I was looking forward to it. I just think it's kind of like interesting that basically Leia and Ben know each other to this point, and they basically never mentioned to this at all during episode one or episode four.
But yeah, so I saw that, and then I also finally got to see for movie wise, I finally saw The Northman. Which came out in April this year, and didn't do like it did okay, but then it's like it did like its budget was like actually like a crazy budget for like it's not an A24 movie, but like that like for like compared to like so like directed by Robert Eggers, who directed like The Witch and The Lighthouse, and this is like The Northman had like 10 times the budget of those, or it's like $90 million compared to like 2 million or 3 million or whatever like Lighthouse costs or whatever. So it's like a huge amount of money, and then like it didn't like really meet the expectations of the box office, but then it's been doing well on like VOD and stuff. So but yeah, it's a big like Viking epic. It's based on the legend of Amleth, who it's a Viking legend, but then that legend inspired Shakespeare to write Hamlet, because it's basically the story of Hamlet. It's like this young prince whose uncle takes the throne, and he has to come back and get revenge and take his throne, the kingdom back. It's also very like Conan the Barbarian, where it's like his like he sees his father murdered in front of him, and then he like is like goes on the run, trains, and becomes like a freaking like ripped berserker, and then goes back. Like,
gotcha.
Definitely the most like straightforward or like accessible like Robert Eggers movie. Like, I mean, the witch is like a super super slow burn, and then like The Lighthouse is just like crazy insanity, like black and white insanity. And this Northman definitely has like some crazy imagery still in it, but like it's like a much more like you can follow the story, like it's like a much more like more conventional story of like revenge and stuff. So it's not like a, you know, like just like Like, did you see The Lighthouse, Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. I mean, who even knows what the hell's happening in that movie? Like,
oh, the first, it's all like metaphors and just kind of like foreshadowing. And then even then, it's just like, it's a movie meant to be analyzed.
Yeah. So yeah, The Northman is like, there is some like visions and stuff, and like you know, like they're seeing visions, like some people see like visions of, like kind of like Viking mythology, Norse mythology stuff. But then, a lot like it's they kind of do, like whenever something fantastical happens, they kind of like snap back and it's like, oh, that person was just having like a vision, or they kind of just imagined it. Like there's a point where like Alexander Skarsgård, like Amleth fights like an undead Draugr, like an undead skeleton warrior, and then to get like this like special sword, but then like after this like big like fight with him, like it just like snaps back to reality. Just like he just it was all in his, like his head. He just like never fought the guy. It was just like he just takes the sword, and then or like he see, or the people see like visions of like, you know, like Valkyries and stuff. So, but then it's like
so it gets that like Max Payne level of loosening.
Like the actual like the show Vikings also did kind of the same thing, where like people are seeing like because Norse mythology, like people are like very into like visions. Sure. And like they believe like the gods are, like actually like walking on the earth with them and stuff. So like there's a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of like visions and like Norse mythology stuff going on. But then it's just like there's just like Amleth just like he. So his father's played by Ethok and is killed before him, and his uncle takes over the kingdom. And then he kind of like escapes, and then just becomes like this like jacked berserker for like this other group. And then he's been like going on raids and like fighting with them for years. But then he kind of gets worried of like, oh, like my like he gets worried about his uncle and like where his uncle is. So then he like is like, I'm gonna go fulfill my destiny, like I promised like my father and kill my uncle. And then he kind of like he goes undercover as like a slave, because like his group like captures a bunch of slaves they're gonna send to like his uncle, so he kind of like disguises himself as one of the slaves, and then like ends up on like his uncle's farm, and then it basically starts like unleashing like psychological warfare on him, just like secretly just like causing things horrible things to happen, and like killing someone and like leaving them, and then like, who did this? Like,
oh really? He like basically does like guerrilla warfare on the tribe.
Yeah, with the help of like Anya Taylor-Joy, who's also she gets captured, but she's also like kind of like a sorceress, and then she's like helping him like come up with these like plans, all these plots to like torment his uncle until like the time is ready to like kill him. But yeah, it's a very cool, if you're like it's not like nonstop action. Like it's not like you don't go expecting like a full on like Conan the Barbarian movie or something. But like there is some like really cool like fight stuff in it. But then it's also like just like you know like just like vibing with the imagery and vibing with like the like you know like the slow burn plot of like revenge for Amleth and stuff. So yeah, it's cool. Definitely check it out if you get a chance. And then I think it's actually on Peacock. If you have Peacock, like if you're paying for Peacock, you can actually just watch it on there. So
nice.
I got the Blu-ray from Netflix. That's why I watched it on.
I got Peacock, but they don't market it that it's on there.
Yeah, they've gotten a bunch of recent movies, and they don't seem to mention it. Just like I forget what else is like just show up on Peacock, but. But actually, the main thing I saw is I saw Triple R on Netflix, which is one of the most insane movies I've ever seen. Like just nonstop craziness, like ridiculous, awesome action, like musical dance numbers. Like it's like literally every, like besides like sci-fi and horror, it's like every genre. It's like romantic comedy, action, musical, like historical epic, like this is from India. It's a Tollywood movie, so it's supposed to be in like the Telugu language. It's not a Bollywood movie. Although it was translated into Hindi, which is like, that's the version that's on Netflix. It's the Hindi version. Although it's supposed to be like this other, it's supposed to be the Telugu version is like the actual version of it. But, and I think it's like the biggest movie in like India, or like this, one of the biggest movies in the Indian cinema history. And it's also like, it's like two of the biggest like Indian like superstars, currently are like in it together. Like it's basically like the equivalent of like, from what I've read, it's like basically the equivalent of like, what if basically in like the late 80s, early 90s, if like Stallone and Schwarzenegger like made a movie together at like the peak of their powers, like there'd be like, it's like basically it's like the equivalent of that for India. It's like, and so N.T. Rama Rao Jr. and Ram Charan are like these like two huge Indian superstars. They're like the main two main guys in this movie, and it's also directed by S.S. Rajamouli, who's like this like basically like the like Michael Bay style like just maximalist like action Indian director. Like he directed like this one, and he also directed like the Bayubali movies, which are also like these like huge crazy like Indian historical epic action movies. But Triple R is basically there. It's very, 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 very loosely based on like these two actual like revolutionaries in India, like Rama Raju and Kamaran Bheem, who, and then basically the idea is like, what if, because they were like around the same time, but they never met each other, or like, but basically the movie's like, hey, what if they became like friends and they like battled the British Empire together?
Well, like this didn't happen historically.
No, historically, like they were around the same time. They lived the same in the same time period, but they never met. And then I think one of them died like super early because he got caught by the British and hung. So, but in this movie, they are like the ultimate bros. Who they basically meet saving this kid from a train that's like burning and crashing off a bridge, and then they. One of them rides a horse. One of them rides a motorcycle. They see each other from across like this like a thousand yards away. They see each other and like they just like non-verbally just like come up with this like, insane plan where they basically like bungee jump off this bridge together. They've never met each other. They just meet each. They like see each other for the first time and then basically come up with this entire plan of like we're gonna like crash our we're gonna jump off this bridge and save this kid with like by hanging off this bridge with a rope. And then
on the chance that this could hold us.
Yeah, we're not gonna talk about it. We're not gonna like discuss it. We're just gonna like do it because we're instantly like the like telepathic bros who can like know what the other one's thinking. But they save this kid and they basically become like super. Like, there's a whole montage of them just like broing out and becoming like best friends. But then you like they each have kind of like their own separate mission they're on. Like, so like Raju. Is a police officer who is undercover. He's trying to find someone who's come because basically like the British governor who's played by Ray Stevenson.
What?
Yeah, Ray Stevenson's movie is the bad guy.
He wandered into this movie.
And then Allison Duty from Last Crusade is here.
As hot Nazi?
Yes, she's back. She's like the evil wife of Ray Stevenson.
She's still hot?
Eh. Yeah. She's like cougary, yeah. And then they basically like kidnap this like young girl from a village. They flip some money to like the like her mother and it's like take this girl away. And it's like and then so they basically learn like oh someone's come from this village who's like a hunter who the protector of the village has come and like is trying to find this girl. So then. Raju, the police officer, is like, I'll find this guy and I'll arrest him. But then it turns out that guy is Bheem, his new best friend.
Oh no.
So it kind of has like a like internal affairs heat kind of thing where it's like, are they gonna learn who like when are they gonna learn who the other like what they're like what the other one's doing? Is that gonna destroy their friendship? Like
they're gonna bro out.
Yeah. there's the song that plays during the montage. You get to see the lyrics. The lyrics of the song are like they're so literal. Where it's just like, what will happen if it's like what will happen if they're like if they learn the like their unspeakable truths with each other? It's like what happens when a raging storm meets a like befriends a like unstoppable storm? Like,
wow. So it's just kind of like not even foreshadowing, just sort of explaining the movie.
The song is literally like just saying like, will they learn each other's secrets? Keep watching to find out. It's like, but yeah, there's but like, yeah, there's like just absolutely absurd, awesome action. Like this movie's 3 hours long, but it's like nonstop action for like pretty much the entire thing. I mean, I don't want to spoil it because like half the fun is just like kind of like you kind of realize what's gonna happen. You're just like, no way, like this is not what's gonna happen right now. And you're like, oh, and then it happens. You're like, oh shit, this is happening.
I don't know. Do they like time travel?
No.
Like based on the plot, also, like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Like there's one involves animals where like that is like just absolutely like one of the coolest action scenes ever been for a film. And oh, and also like both the guys get like the most badass like intro, like the action hero intro scene where like Raju is like guarding like this police station and it's like there's like 1,000 protesters around the police station, like protesting them because like they arrested like one of the like leaders of the like a revolutionary leader and they want him like released. And then some guy throws a stone and hits like the like a up, like a pitcher in the police station. The captain of the police station is like, arrest that man. It's like no one ever just like, are you fucking crazy? We're not gonna go out to, like arrest this one guy in this crowd of like 1,000. But then Raju leaps like flies over the fence because also like. Yeah, like these guys, like they're basically like superhumans. They like they never acknowledge or like explain, but it's just like they have like it's basically like Crushing Tiger at some point. Where they just have like they can like leap super high or like pick up things that are like no person could pick up. But basically, Raju jumps into this crowd and fights the entire crowd to get this one guy. So it's like one guy is fighting 1,000 people basically with like a police baton. And so that's how this movie starts, basically. It's like this one guy fighting like 1,000 people. And then Beam, his intro is like he and his brothers are like trying to like hunt down, they're trying to capture a wolf in the jungle. But then they actually lure in a tiger. So it's like he has to like get chased by a tiger and fight a tiger. It's his intro. So that's how you like introduce these two guys. And then like when they meet, it just gets more and more crazy from there. But there's also like big elaborate dance sequences because it's an indie movie. There's like a big dance sequence like it ends with like a huge dance sequence. Like there's parts where it just turns into a romantic comedy where like Raju's trying to like help Beam like Ray Stevens' like niece is like Beam's love interest and he's like trying to like help Beam like go on a date with Jenny and go on like go to a party with her and stuff. So it's like literally everything in this movie.
I mean, it sounds cool.
I feel like if you're into stuff like Ong Bak and stuff, like I'm sure you're probably like it has that kind of vibe where it's like it's like but like Ong Bak times like a million or like times like 10, like it's like if you thought Ong Bak was crazy, like Triple R is like even like next level crazy.
I'm just thinking it's always those like foreign action movies where they kind of understood just more action, less plot.
Yeah.
It's stuck in the 80s.
I mean, there's still like tons of plot and there's still tons of character stuff, but it's also just like these super over the top, like ridiculous, awesome action sequences, and they also really play on like they play on this like theme of like Raju is fire and Beam is water. So there's, like every time they like a lot of the fight scenes, like they're like using like Raju will just like walk through explosions constantly, or like Beam will like burst out of like he'll like be hiding in like a pond or like a lake and like burst out and it's like water all over, like he like come out of the water like using water as like his weapon and stuff. So it's like they like play on that a lot, like throughout the whole movie. But yeah, if you have Netflix, definitely. I mean, I think you definitely have to check it out because set aside the 3 hours and watch it because it's so it's so huge and over the top and crazy and awesome and there's stuff you've never seen in a movie before. So yeah, 100% check out RRR. And then that's it for me this week, so we can wrap things up. Definitely head over to the site. We got all of our usual stuff out there. We've got our Invasion USA commentaries up, so you can check that out. We watched that with Austin Trunick, who's the author of the Canon Film Guide, so there's a lot of awesome behind-the-scenes trivia for that commentary, and along with our usual, like, wacky banter about what's going on. So definitely head over and check that out. You can grab Invasion USA on like Prime Video or DVD or Blu-ray and watch that along with us. And then all the regular stuff's up there as well, so head over and check all the stuff out. And yeah, so for Chris, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.